Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:03. I'm Mike Diller with you, and joining me in the studio for our usual discussion from Learn New Mexico, the owner, Dr. Michelle Perry. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Me and Andre and having a good time. You know me.
Good. I always love to see you smile, though.
There you go. There you go.
When you're Andre, you smile. That's the best.
That means I'm up to something.
I know, and I want in on it.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, I tell you what, our topic today is flipped classrooms.
Mm.
And I think I'm kind of liking this idea because this is a traditional. I remember growing up, teachers would stand up front and say, listen and learn. And now we got the kids more involved in the learning.
Yeah,
this is such a cool thing. And one of the things I noticed in a little bit of research I was looking at, kids who are absent due to illness or something, mm-hmm. they don't fall behind.
Right.
This is really a cool thing. So let's talk about flipped classrooms. First of all, what is it so people understand what we're talking about?
Absolutely. Well, in the vein of our themes that we always cover on the show, it's education-based. And in this particular instance, it has to do with classroom instruction. Mm-hmm. So it's a method of instruction. So we talked about project-based learning. A few weeks ago, maybe it was last month. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was last month. Yeah,
and so that was a way to approach instruction that provided a student a way to really interact with their learning mm-hmm. in a real and rigorous way.
Right.
So, you know, the student takes on a whole project. There's goals with this project. They complete the project. It involves all kinds of skills, all kinds of content. And so it's this combined effort to really provide a meaningful learning experience. Well, flipped classroom is similar in a way. It's a method in which we use active participation,
mm-hmm.
the learning that happens with active participation is way more beneficial than passive participation.
Right.
So let's just talk about what passive versus active participation looks like. And you started the show there with a perfect example of passive participation. Teacher teaches lectures, it's called direct instruction, and student listens.
Okay. Right.
So the thing about listening only is that we only really remember about 10%
mm-hmm.
of what we're taught when we only listen. Now you throw in some visual aids, you know, well, that goes up to about 20%. You throw in some recordings, maybe of a movie or maybe of a, you know, a story that's recorded, and now you're listening to a story, you're seeing something, and then you're also ingesting the content. You know, you're getting
right.
to maybe read it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So reading, listening, experience, then you're really moving up the scale to more active participation in that way.
Right.
The more active you go, the better retention you have. That just makes logical sense, right?
Yeah.
It's why so many presentations use slide decks.
Right.
Like, for instance, I'll be at the county today helping Main Street try to secure some funds, and we have given them a presentation, right? They can look at it. We've already provided that to them, and they have these slides that they can actually look at and read. And then we're going to come in and talk to them as well so that they see it, they hear it, they get it, multimodalities. The thing is that that's still passive. They're not actively participating in anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they may remember only part of it, if any of it.
Right.
But active participation, when you're actually participating and you're doing the thing that you're learning about, you're going to have higher levels of retention.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like field trips. You know, when we offer students ways to go to field trips, perhaps we're, you know, studying a particular time in history and we take a field trip to a museum
mm-hmm.
and so that we can actually experience that. You know, and of course, you know where I'm going next, virtual reality.
Right.
You know, so we can actually jump in headsets and we can all experience something together,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the space station or Rome, or maybe we want to go to Anne Frank's house to
mm-hmm.
learn, you know, that piece of World War II history. So we're all together and we can all learn experiencing this together. So experiences are the best. So how does that all pertain to flipped classroom? So the concept of flipped classroom is very simple, is that the homework, as it were. You know, you got the homework that you do outside of the classroom, and then you've got the work that you do in the classroom. And so instead of it being lecture-based in the classroom, it's activity-based in right. the classroom. So perhaps you are wanting your students to watch a YouTube video. Perhaps you're teaching something about a history concept. I don't know. Let's pick on the Vietnam War. Yeah. And then maybe you want your students to read or preview this content, this topic, this really specific, very specific piece of content or concept. So you have them read or watch outside the classroom, and then in the classroom you're actually doing something, an activity. You know, maybe they are playing a game that replicates, you know, the entire strategy of the war. Right. And they're having to maybe debate the war.
Right.
Maybe they're doing, you know, Socratic seminars, and they're diving into the content and doing active participation in the classroom. Now, there's a fallacy with this, right? Can you guess what the problem is of flipped classrooms?
No, I can't. I really can't, because I've got these ideas of examples that I've used in training people in radio, mm-hmm. you know, that involves kind of what we're talking about. So I don't understand. I don't know what the disadvantage is. So enlighten me.
So every teacher will tell you they have a certain percentage of students who never do homework.
Participation.
So they'll be assigned the homework. I'd use you know, air quotes there, because homework can look a lot of different ways. When we think about homework, we think about the traditional sense in which the child goes home from school, sits down at this beautiful kitchen table, and mom serves cookies, and the child does, you know, an hour of homework. But the problem is that's not real, right?
Right.
For like maybe 10% of the population, that's real.
Right.
But most of the time, that's not real.
Right.
So teachers will tell you that there's a large percentage of their students that don't do their homework.
Right.
And so in a flipped classroom, if they don't do their homework, they're at a disadvantage, because
right.
then they're not connecting those concepts to the participation. And so they're missing half the learning.
Right.
So there's another concept, you're diving a little deeper on this topic, is called the end flip.
Okay.
And so what that requires is a teacher to use center-based instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, you know, this is a really good way to get active participation and really help students have a lot more retention for their learning. However, it's kind of a heavier lift for the teacher. You know, it requires the teacher to do a little bit of extra work, which, I mean, teachers are already overloaded. So this is kind of a hard sell, and I do professional development on this topic, and these are the conversations we have. So the end flip provides a way for the teacher to do center-based instruction, where the students get into centers. And so, hey, those of you students who actually read the content or watched the video last night, you're going to go ahead and come over to this center and start working on that next topic.
Mm-hmm.
And those of you who are like mastering this topic already, here's your extension over here on this area of the room. And so you're going to go even further with this. Maybe you're doing a full-blown project-based learning. But for those of you who didn't, you're going to start over here, and then at some certain point, those students join those other two groups,
right.
you know, during the class period or during the learning time. And so that requires a conducting of an orchestra, or
yeah.
A circus, you know, ringleader. I mean, you know, that requires a lot of logistics and organization on the teacher's part. So then the teacher has to figure out, like, okay, well, how does that look, and how do I get my students to cooperate with that kind of structure?
Right.
And then we're like saying, if the students can do their homework in class, then why would we even assign it? And on and on and on. So these conversations kind of start unraveling a little bit. So the idea of the flipped classroom is that we have active participation in the classroom setting, right? We get back to the main point.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're not at least attempting that active participation through flipped learning, through project-based learning, through experiential learning, whatever you want to call it, if we're not attempting it, we're doing our students a disservice.
Right.
Because our kids need that hands-on active participation.
Well, I think one of the things most important in this is the fact that teachers need to encourage students to question, ask questions as they're doing the discussion. Now, I know that, and I'm going to throw this at you, because when I first started in, second time I started in radio back in Great Bend, Kansas, the program director said, I want all salespeople to understand what's going on in the control room. So he would bring each of us in one at a time and say, it's doing this, you click this, you say this, you click that, and, and then he walked out. Mm. And I walked out right behind him. When I train people here, mm-hmm. I have them sit there, watch me, mm-hmm. then I bring them over here, mm-hmm. and then I stand behind them, mm-hmm. and I point, do this, do that, read this, mm-hmm. so they get it. And then I put them back over there, and then they watch me do it again. Then I bring them back over here, walk them through it again, mm-hmm. then I walk out of the room. Mm-hmm. That has worked so well that I had a person several years ago that was here. She was over here, and she was watching. She read some news, and she was watching me, and I looked over, and her hands were moving like mine were on the board, and I put her in the chair.
Yeah.
I put her in the chair.
She was pretty fast. Caught on pretty fast.
She caught on real well, but I still, play this, play mm-hmm. this, play that.
Yeah.
You know, they understand, take the mouse and push that. They understand that, but they didn't know what to push. Mm-hmm. You know, so mm-hmm. I work with people that way. Mm-hmm. To me, that's project learning. That's, mm-hmm. hands on. Mm-hmm. That is interactive mm-hmm. learning.
Right.
You make sure that they can do it, understand the mechanics, and they can do that and know why we do it this way.
Right.
You know, so now back to the flipped classroom. I think from what I saw that some of the benefits are, first of all, children won't fall behind, but here's the key thing, and we talked about it earlier. They got to do the homework.
That's it.
You got to do the research. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask this question. Why aren't students doing the homework?
Oh, there's a multitude of reasons. Their home environment doesn't allow for it. That's the least of their worries when they get to the house. Their schedules are so full. I used to see this with my own two kids. They'd have sports practice or clubs till 8 o'clock at night, and then they'd get home at 8, and it's like, have you done your homework? No, I haven't even done my homework, and they're exhausted. And something there's that. These kids simply don't want to, and there's that. so homework doesn't get done for a whole lot of reasons. But there's ways around that as well. Mm-hmm. You know the whole topic of assigning homework. I've seen a lot of teachers just move away from it completely.
Yeah,
like I'm just not assigning homework. And so there's a problem with that too, though, mm-hmm. Because kids have to own their learning.
That's
And so if you're going to do some active learning, active participation, for instance, this flipped classroom idea, and you want the kids to be ready with a basis of the content, we call that like a depth of knowledge one, mm-hmm. just some knowledge, the years, the people involved, the situation at hand, whatever the content may be, but some basic knowledge, just an awareness level so that they can jump right in to the more deeper learning and application. Right. We have conversations like this about mm-hmm. homework. So where are the kids typically? Where do you find them anyway? And they think about it and they say, well, yeah, on their phones. Yes, exactly.
Gaming consoles.
Yeah, kids are on their phones. We have a huge issue with high school students being completely distracted by their phones all the time. And so much so that there's pretty strict rules about mm-hmm. no phones, being allowed in classrooms. And I've seen schools where they have lockers, like little lockers in every single classroom where when the students walk in, it's right by the door and they have to put their phone in the locker in their slot and the teacher locks the locker for the class. Yeah. I've seen it go to that extreme. Teachers will sometimes use over-the-door shoe holders where the kids have to put their phone in the pocket so they can still see it, but they can't access it. In one district I work with, there's a rule in their high school that all the backpacks, because they don't do lockers anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot of high schools have gotten away from using lockers.
Wow.
No more lockers because it causes too many other issues. And so they have their backpacks. The kids have their backpacks all the time. And so the kids have to put their phone in their backpacks, and their backpacks go against the front wall of the classroom, away from them. And so there are all these strategies around keeping kids off their phones. So I'm thinking, like, okay, well, we know the minute they walk out of that classroom, that's what they're doing. We know when they go home, that's what they're doing. They're on their phones. So what can we put on their phones for homework? And then we start talking all different kinds of options. And so a lot of kids are on Instagram, right? Not so much Facebook anymore. Kids aren't really, that's more for you and I.
Yeah.
But they are on Insta, they're on Snapchat. And I said, what if you're learning about the Roman Empire and Julius Caesar has an Insta account? Create an Insta account for Julius Caesar.
Wow.
And now your homework assignment is for you to interact with Julius Caesar. And so they have to ask a question. You know, they have to, you know, interact with him, post a picture. Julius Caesar may put a post out like, you know, I wonder where my next, it's the year is, blah, blah, blah. I wonder where my next battle should be.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids have to go figure that out and then post it. Well, I know where your next battle should be.
Right.
Right. Okay, so that really bends our mind a little bit about the standard typical homework. Are the kids getting the content that we need to cover in the next day? Yes. Are they getting it where they live? Yes. Are they getting it in a very shallow sense? Yes. Yeah. However, you made a good point about your example with how you teach people to use your, you know, space-age computer system over there. You said, okay, I'm going to show you, then we're going to do it together, and then you're going to do it by yourself. And that's called a gradual release. And that's a standard pedagogical stance. I mean, that's what teachers are taught in traditional programs is that's how you teach, is as I do, we do, you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and there's been debate lately on whether or not that's really effective and a lot of discussion. But honestly, you know, I'm old, and that's the way I taught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, teaching in different new ways is no problem, but that's a standard core way to approach any kind of instruction, is let me show you, then we'll do it together, and then you're going to do it on your own. And then in there is an assessment, right? You assess if they did it. And here's the crazy thing, is that a person, in order to do something, like perform a task like that, they have to do it 25 times before it's in long-term memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a lot of repetition.
Yeah.
And so that's why sports has us practice, right? If we want to be really good with our gross motor skills to do a specific kind of skill in a sport, we have to practice. It's the same with our brains.
Mm-hmm.
We have to continually practice. What do we know about language development? We know that if we're trying to learn a new language, the best way to learn is immersion.
Yeah.
Go there. You know, go to the place where you're needing to speak that language. For instance, I was in Germany for 3 years as a child and learned to speak German pretty quickly because, you know, I was a teenager and I wanted to know other teenagers and they spoke German and some English and I spoke English and some German and their English got better, my German got better because of our interests and need. But I was immersed daily, left Germany, been gone for 30 years now and I can barely speak German anymore.
Yeah.
Because I don't practice anymore. I don't use it. You don't use it, you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way our brains work. That's the way our bodies work. We stop working out, we lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that idea is that we're continually engaging the student, using their brains to think critically, build those synapses, you know, make sure that they're connecting dots. You know, and that active participation, whether it's flipped classroom or anything else, is really the core value of what we need to do for our kids.
I tell you what, the flipped classroom, I think, is such a great idea because it does involve the teacher more with the students more.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of you tell me I'm wrong, but it seems to be more of an engagement between the teacher and the students.
Mm-hmm.
More of an active discussion now, question and answer discussion. I think this, well, y'all would think about this, all this stuff comes into play in this flipped classroom. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong or right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I'll give you an example of one thing I did in modeling for some teachers in another district. I did this whole modeling. And so I said, we're going to do speed dating. Have you ever heard of speed dating? And so speed dating is when you get to meet a person and you sit down with them for 5 minutes and then a bell rings and then another person comes and sits down with you for 5 minutes. This is speed dating.
Yeah.
So I described this to the teenagers and they were like, what? They were shocked and amazing. So I had to explain what this was. I said, this is a legit thing. People do this, you know. Your parents did that.
Yeah. Your older brother or sister may have done it.
so you know, now with technology, they get to know each other online. You know, when kids are interested in dating another person, they will talk. They will. That's what this literally called. They'll talk. They'll be talking.
Yeah.
And when they're not really talking, they're texting.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's all they're doing. But anyway, okay, I digress. And
with two or three letter words.
Exactly. So speed dating, I explained this, and I said, okay, so half the classroom is going to sit on this side of the table, and the other half's on this side of the table, and this is the topic. I gave them a topic. I don't even remember what it was. It was something that they were learning about. I want to say it was English-based. It was Chaucer. It was something about Chaucer, and they had to do a compare contrast. So inferencing is huge, you know, at that level, and so we had to teach inferencing, and part of that is compare and contrast. And so their job was to spend 3 minutes with each of their peers talking about this topic and take at least one note, you know, take one down, one thing that was said, even if it's just one word. And then it was every 3 minutes the bell would ring, then they'd switch seats. And the bell would ring, they'd switch seats. And then, so basically, I was having them engage in a learning process that required them to talk and write, and then talk and write over and over and over again. And so when we got done with it, and we, you know, what probably went 10 rounds, they had a whole page of concepts, thoughts, ideas, and words regarding this topic. And so now the task was write a paragraph summarizing what you've learned through your conversation.
Yeah, awesome.
So you see, now they came to me with maybe with already knowledge that of the concept. They had to have in order to participate. Otherwise, they would have just stared at each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So they had to, you know, be engaged in this content already, and then when they get hit in the classroom, they're doing something. They're participating, talking to each other, taking down notes, preparing for the assessment, which was the paragraph.
Right.
And of course, modeling and showing them what you expect, all huge parts. That's the I do, we do, you do, mm-hmm. gradual release. And so by the end of that class period, much to the amazement of the classroom teacher, each student had written one complete paragraph on the topic.
Man, I tell you what, this just sounds like, I don't know, it, to me, this is a great idea, because mm-hmm. the participation, and you said something about that thing that you just did. They had to engage, they had to communicate, and they had to write.
Yes.
You know, and they had to listen to write down the thought, you know, and then do an assessment or write the paragraph. That is so key in learning,
mm-hmm.
and that's throughout life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the communication and the ability to write and formulate your thoughts, write it down. I know for me, learning when I was in high school and college, it was write it down. I read mm-hmm. a book, I'd write it down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, there were sometimes I'd write the whole paragraph and then sit there and go through it and scratch it out and then rewrite it and then rewrite it until, mm-hmm.
It's annotations is so hugely important.
Yeah,
our high school students get their end of comprehensive assessment to exit high school now is the SAT, and so SAT is a lot of inferencing, and you have to know how to annotate in order to inference well, and so you got to know what you're looking for when you read, and so we teach that huge annotation skill. And if kids can't write directly on the text you give them, that's silly. We can't be giving them books and say don't write in your book. They got to be able to write in their book. And mm-hmm. so that brings to light a whole other conversation about how we can use technology. Mm-hmm. But annotation is super important. But you had said something that was intriguing. Oh, yes. And I wanted to say also in this example, what I just described, the teacher's doing something. Mm-hmm. So not only are the kids doing something, the teacher's doing something. So this isn't something where the teacher goes, all right, kids, have fun, and they go sit at their desk.
Right.
So that, to me, is one of the most, I mean, it's a travesty when I see mm-hmm. teachers just check out.
Yeah.
Because that's not what your job is. And so what I was modeling in this particular example for this particular classroom is I had a rolly chair. And so I would roll with the kids. I would like roll behind them and then I'd roll up on my chair with them and I'd listen and they would talk and then I'd ask a pertinent question to make their thinking deeper. And then they would talk about that. I'd back up and roll to the next one. And roll to the next one. I mean, because we're all sitting. I don't want to be standing. Mm-hmm. So I modeled, this is how you would do it.
Yeah.
As a teacher, you're listening and you're asking the right questions to guide their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it may sound obvious, but trust me, I've been in a lot of classrooms and it's not obvious for teachers to know that their job is to continually facilitate and stay in tune with the students.
I think we just got a couple of minutes here, but you know, with that you just said, it seems like years ago, if you were proficient in math, history, English, you could become a teacher. But nobody really taught how to teach. And there was this model that they had from growing up, that's how you taught. Now we're talking about something new here. And you almost like people need to have a class on, okay, now you're your math instructor, a history, you know, you got all this. Now let's have a teaching class and teach you how to teach.
It's about your pedagogy. And and so in the traditional teacher ed programs, there is pedagogical instruction. I mean, you do get all of the history of child development and learning strategies. But here's the problem is half of our teachers these days have never come through the traditional program.
Yeah.
They're learning on their feet.
Yeah.
Half, I'm telling you, are alternative licensed.
Yeah.
And so that means that they came from another career sector and sat down in a classroom. So they don't have all of the pedagogy behind them. They don't understand how learning mm-hmm. happens. You know, the actual system of teaching and learning and that reciprocated system, that's not what they studied. That's not what they learned. And so now they have to be taught. And, you know, even teachers who went through the traditional program, I was one of them. You hit that classroom and it's a whole new ball game because it's not theoretical.
Yeah.
And that's the problem is so many of our teacher prep programs stay in the theoretical. So theoretically, all your students should be well-fed, well-groomed, have 8 hours of sleep, ready to learn, have had appropriate nutrition, have had all of the emotional child development welfare that they needed, and they're there to learn.
Yeah.
And that is far from the case.
Right. And a lot of these people, the teacher will expect them to learn as that teacher learned.
Well, there is that. You know, I call it the CD-ROM. Do you remember the old CD-ROMs?
Yeah.
Like there's one there. You pop it out and you put the CD-ROM in and around it goes.
Yeah.
Our brains are CD-ROMs.
Right.
And so we plug in to what is on there.
Yeah.
It's already there and we play it. And that's dangerous. Because the way that we were taught, the way that we were learned, the way that we were reared as a child is not necessarily relevant to the way we really need to be doing things for our kids today.
Right. Real quick, what are the advantages of the flipped classroom?
Well, the advantages are that you have students who are going to be actively engaged in the presence of their teacher and that the teacher gets the pleasure to actively engage themselves with the learning versus having to deliver all of the knowledge as if they were pouring water from a vessel into little brains. That you know, is boring for everybody. And so the biggest blessing is that active participation increases learning retention.
There you go. There it is. And I'm going to say this. I've said it for years. I did it. And parents, you've got to get involved in your child's education. If there's homework to do, make sure they get it done.
Communication is key with your teachers.
That's it. And talk to your teachers. Don't believe your children all the time and don't believe the teacher all the time. Question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Michelle, always fun talking to
always
you. Great topics.
Yeah.
And we could almost go on this for another couple of weeks.
And this spurs off onto so many other topics.
No doubt about it, but it's a great concept. Just go to Google and check out flipped classrooms and research the advantages of it and stuff. I think it's a great concept. Teaching is And learning is evolving.
Always.
And I don't think anybody's going to learn anything if they learn the way I did in high school, in grade school. So.
Yeah, we're getting far away from that. Yeah, Me too, from the way I learned.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dr. Michelle Perry, always fun.
Thank you, Mike. It's been awesome.
You bet. Have a great one.
You too.
And we'll talk to you next month.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.